This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is the home of Carmen and Yurko.
Follow us on the gram at Carmen and Yurko and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
Yurk's off this week. I'm flying solo today. Jeff Meller will be in with me tomorrow. Chris Black later in the week. Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. I think people probably are aware that Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez have been trying to buy the Mets for some time, right? The Wilpons are selling. And there's more news about the kind of group here or the star power of the group
that
they're
putting
together.
If they buy him, do they take over the Bobby Bonilla payment each year?
Well, of course, okay. Yeah. I mean, Bobby Bo's getting his money, man. Just a couple weeks ago, right? July 1, Bobby Bonilla Day.
We celebrated it.
We did. We celebrated it every year. Yes, he's getting his money. So we are learning that they've got some group here that they've put together, J-Lo and Alex Rodriguez, and a former Chicago Bear, a Hall of Famer, is part of the crew. It's not Coach Ditka. I don't think Coach Ditka wants to own the Mets at this point. It's Brian Urlacher. Urlacher, Travis Kelce, DeMarco Murray, Joe Thomas, Bradley Beal, Mason Plumlee. It's like, wait, this is, I mean, you really got a wide range here. All teaming up with Jennifer Lopez and Alex Rodriguez in an effort to buy the Mets. The group has already submitted its initial bid of $1.7 billion. Woof. Hedge fund billionaire Steve Cohen has made the top bid so far of $2 billion. According to a report by the New York Post, Mets COO Jeff Wilpon would prefer to sell to the Rodriguez-Lopez group if its offer is close to the best bid at the end of the auction, according to the Post. We couldn't be more excited to have such high-quality individuals as part of our group, Lopez and Rodriguez told ESPN. The group is in standby mode, awaiting word from MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred regarding the next step in the process. We've got to get a hold of Urlacher, see how much he's kicking in. Like, what percentage is Brian going to get? Does he get a box for every game at Citi Field? You know he's going to invite Sylvie and Waddle to one of the. We got to tag along on that trip.
Sylvie's going to start sending him texts. How about we make this trade?
Hey, you know that's going to happen. Hey, we went on the bus for Urlacher to get into Canton. Let's get on a bus and go to New York and say, hey, will you put us up in a suite one night at Citi Field?
I mean, Carm, can we get in on this? I mean, $1.7 billion, that to me, isn't that a bargain price for a major market baseball team?
The problem is, I think, because of, you know, going back like 20 years now, because of, don't they hemorrhage money? They're one of the teams that might legitimately lose money in baseball because they got swindled by Madoff, right? I don't know how all those finances work. I don't know if you can believe anything that these MLB owners say, but it seems like they're a team that does not do particularly well because of what happened in the Madoff scandal. I don't know. I don't follow it closely enough. It seems light for the Mets. Right. I'm with you, Chris.
And we were talking about SNY, the TV network that they're on. They control and own 65% of the network.
Wow.
So, like, to be in on a baseball franchise and have 65% of a TV network, to me, $1.7 billion seems low.
It does seem kind of light. I wonder, like, what's the minimum bid here? Like, what do we have to come up with? You know, Urlacher's got some scratch lying around. You know, he could throw in probably 10 schmil like it's no problem. I got to wonder what.
I've got 50 bucks, you know, that I could put for it.
I could scrape up maybe like 25 hundo, you know, would that be, could we get anything for that? I wonder. Is James Fegan ready to go, Merck? Let's, you know, James, we'll see if maybe he wants to contribute. Now, he'd have to stop covering the White Sox, maybe. I don't know if you could be partial owner of a team and still cover a team in the league. James Fegan covers the White Sox and MLB for The Athletic. Chicago, he joins Carmen and Yurko now on ESPN 1000. You want to buy the Mets with us? It sounds like they're taking everybody, so.
I mean, I submitted a bid for $37, and they said they would get back to me.
Yeah.
And it's like you get the tag you get on Google Gmail where it's like, do you want to follow up on that? Like,
yeah.
It's been 5 days. Like, right. That's where I'm at right now.
You're not going to expect to hear back from them anytime soon.
I think it'd be professional, too.
I think it would be, too. I mean, the common courtesy would be like, eh, your bid's a little light. But does $1.7 billion seem a little light for such a, you know, for the New York Mets, doesn't it?
I don't know. This is way too big of a number for me to comprehend.
All right, let's get down to the brass tacks here, James. The Michael Kopech story has sort of dominated the return of baseball for the White Sox, anyway, on the South side, since it was first reported that he was not going to attend the restart here in the summer camp. You did a good job sort of documenting, you know, what has happened in the last 10 days or so between the club and Kopech. I got to say, I was surprised to read Don Cooper's comments. To me, that made it sound more like something in his head and not just concern about his elbow. Is Don Cooper know something that we don't, or is he just speaking out of turn?
I mean, he certainly knows Michael Kopech well, and I think, like all of us, there's until he kind of comes and clears the air, there's a little bit of speculation. But from my understanding of the meeting is that the people involved who know of what drove Kopech's decision are who he talked to, which would be Jerry Reinsdorf, Rick Hahn, Jeremy Haber, and Rick Renneria. Those are who he kind of canvassed with 2 weeks ago to let them know everything that's going forward. I can't say, the primary thing is that I can't speak to Michael Kopech's mental health, and I don't think really anyone else can outside of that meeting either. It'd be kind of speculating, and because it would be speculating, and because it's about his mental state, I feel like it would be kind of a little disrespectful to the reasoning that he's put out, that his camp has put out there, to kind of say, like, well, maybe he's just not well, and that's why he's doing it. It would be, it's kind of discrediting the reasons that his grouping has provided. Yeah. So I just don't think it's, like, really in the proper approach to it. And I think it's somewhat, punishing him a little bit for speaking out and being so open about it, to kind of throw that kind of doubt on what every decision he makes. I don't think it's really fair to him.
Is there any idea on when he plans to speak with you guys, or at least release some sort of a statement?
No, not really. I would say at this point, just kind of knowing Michael and how he's felt in the past, I'm assuming the next time there's a big public appearance that he'll clear the air. He's someone who's kind of an open book once you deal with him. But I think it's probably coming in the, I'm sure people will reach out to him during the off season. I probably would be doing my job to do that, checking on that as well. But I, at this point, I would think it'd be something like whatever the ramp up for 2021 starts. At this point, it's kind of hard to imagine a Sox Fest, just because it doesn't seem like something that would happen during the current environment. But whatever spring training looks like, whatever the start of 2021 promotion looks like, I feel like there'll be a Michael Kopech availability where he'll probably lay out how it went down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say, like, is it incumbent upon him? Maybe that's too harsh, but, like, when everybody else has to sort of answer the questions for you, it does lead to wild speculation. Like, wouldn't it be better if he did come out sooner rather than later so that his teammates in the organization can stop being asked about it?
Yeah, I think that's probably would be my preference for sure. I don't know if I would think it'd probably be something at this point, if he's asking for his privacy, I don't know if coming out in the middle of season while everyone's trying to focus on who's here would be deemed as necessarily appropriate. I definitely think maybe clearing the air privately with his teammates might be something he does sooner, since they're still being asked questions about it and kind of in the position that, to some degree, Don Cooper has put in to kind of speculate when they don't really know everything about his motivations behind it. So probably the sooner that he feels comfortable addressing that, I can't say he has to, but it would probably make it easier for everybody. But as far as addressing us, I think it's probably something that comes after the season.
Okay. James Fegan's our guest from The Athletic. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. How does the loss of Kopech affect this team for 2020?
I think that kind of the rotation, is before the season, and, even when talking about what Kopech's role would be, it's based off the idea that you have this luxury, this too many starters for one slot, and you can be super aggressive and put guys in the bullpen. You guys as super relievers have the Carlos Rodon closer dream that people have always had. Now I think it's more you got six kind of established major league guys for five slots, and that's probably the depth you need to get through a two-month season, especially one without much ramp-up, especially one where there's health risk and everything. You're probably going to need all six guys to really just have a normal rotation and to get through it healthy. Your depth spots are the two minor leaguers with Dane Dunne and Jimmy Lambert, but given the guys, need those guys to pitch from AAA, you can't really slide one of them in and expect no drop-off. So I think you got to have just a normal rotation with those six guys. And, frankly, Dylan Cease, Ronaldo Lopez, we know their talent and we know why that they are in the rotation, but they have not been above average guys at the big league level yet. Right. So this is a rotation that kind of has to prove that they're the guys. I mean, Carlos Rodon kind of has to prove that, even though we know he's talented, even though we've seen him dominate on given nights, that he can be a consistent guy in a rotation. So it's probably at this point the squeaky wheel of the team more than the offense that this rotation can prove itself.
The White Sox seem to be everybody's kind of like dark horse pick here, James, right? Because they've got a lot of talent, and you've got this crazy 60-game season now where, you know, really anything's possible. I mean, there's only probably a handful of teams that you'd say are completely, totally out of it, because it allows for a lot of variance. So I don't know if that's good or bad as a White Sox fan. Sometimes I feel like when everybody's picking you, that's a bad thing. But, I mean, are they feeling pretty supremely confident that they could make a run at getting to the postseason if this season is actually played to completion?
They're a team where the if it all goes right scenario is as high as anybody. Because if it all goes right, like Luis Robert is like an all-star caliber player right out the box. If it all goes right, like Eloy Jimenez is one of the best 3-4 hitters. But none of them have necessarily reached that consistent level yet. And you're kind of hoping for all the rapid development and for guys to get to their ceiling really quickly. So, yeah, they're supremely confident because at this point it's all about potential and projection and opportunity. But it also wouldn't be surprising if some of these guys are just mediocre for a year, especially a shortened year, because they're still kind of adjusting to the majors. Like Luis Robert has still not played a major league game ever. So, yeah, he did hit the seemingly impossible home run the other day and has crazy skills, but we haven't seen it translate. Like Nick Madrigal has no major league experience, even if you think he's the second base in the future. It wouldn't be unreasonable at all for him to struggle for 60 games. And it wouldn't be unreasonable for Eloy Jimenez to be kind of good, but not great yet, because he just doesn't have that many reps. And you're still kind of waiting on Yan Moncada, who was the best hitter on the team last year. So there's still some uncertainty where I wouldn't peg them as division winners or anything like that. But they have that in their ceiling, so they have every reason to kind of be confident and set that as their goal.
What is that Moncada timeline, by the way? Any anything definitive on his return?
Literally, I'm like you. I'm coming here every day. Like maybe he'll be here. We obviously don't really get updates on the situation, given what it likely is. And I think it's more of a question of day by day. When does he come back? Will he have enough time to get prepared for the season? We're talking to the hitting coach the other day. He felt like Moncada needed 20 at bats to really be ready. He still has time to get something like that, and I think that probably really would be bare minimum. And he would worry about going from zero to playing every single day on his legs if that happened. But I think there's still time where if he showed up tomorrow, that'd be great. You'd expect him to be ready and be the opening day guy and be the star third baseman he was last year. But it's getting a little agonizing waiting every day to see if those curls are going to pop out of the dugout.
Yeah. So for guys like you that cover these teams, I mean, under normal circumstances, you're within close proximity to these guys and you talk to them and you get one-on-one access and you build relationships. How much more difficult is that going to be, especially in a season like this, where I'm assuming the one-on-one conversations, the one-on-one interaction, will not happen for the foreseeable future?
You can request it, but you're requesting of a PR staff that's already doing kind of backflips to create the normal level of group interviews that they would easily be able to assemble during a spring training. Like right now, I feel like they've done a great job as far as like we're talking to like 4 guys a day, which is a lot for them to coordinate in Zoom meetings. But to tack on requests to like, oh, I want to get this guy on the phone on his own, or I want to like a private Zoom meeting, like obviously that's a lot to ask. And if you're normally left to a device as a reporter and you're not putting that onus on a media staffer, you can grab 4 or 5 one-on-ones in one day. Now coordinating one is a lot of work, and there's no one really to blame on that, but that's the reality of it. I wouldn't want to be a first-year guy on the beat, because you really need to lean on your existing relationships right now, and it's not really an opportunity to build one by being there and being present, guys seeing who you are and what you're about and how you conduct yourself.
All right, last thing I'll ask you before I let you go, James. Should White Sox fans like be at all concerned about the long-term, I guess you'd say health, maybe mental health of Michael Kopech?
I mean, I think it'd be really unfair to kind of speculate on his mental health, and I don't think it's really nothing that I've seen him prevent him from just being beyond this, obviously, the fact that he's not playing this year. But I've never seen it as a hurdle to something that's going to drive him away from baseball, or something that made him unmotivated for the sport, or something that's going to take him away from the game. So I think the fair concerns, I would say, are, he's going to, by the time we see him next, he's going to not pitch in over 2.5 years in a live game. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a readjustment. It's a bummer from a developmental standpoint that Michael Kopech has 4 career big league starts. He's going to need to take his lumps and kind of get better. Now we're going to see that process start in 2021 rather than some of it get underway in this year. and maybe 2021 is a year where you have less tolerance for that type of struggles because you're trying to compete. So everything on him getting pushed back a year, I think, is a bummer from a developmental standpoint. But as far as, like, speculating if mental health is, like, some sort of impact on him, I don't think that'd be fair.
Great insight, James. Appreciate the time, as always.
All right. Thanks for having me.
There's James Feegan J.R. Feegan on Twitter. He covers the White Sox for The Athletic. Get back to the conversation we were having towards the end of what's trending about the Redskins changing the name, and are all the other teams, and there aren't that many, let's face it, anymore, but are they going to follow suit? And are the Chicago Blackhawks at some point going to face mounting pressure, or at least just look internally and say, we need to change our name? It's a different kind of discussion with the Blackhawks. We were explaining that about 15 minutes ago. I'll circle back to the conversation when we come back. But if you've got a thought on it, let us know. It's a little nuanced with the Blackhawks. We'll continue to talk about why. 312-332-3776. It's Carmen and Yurko.
Carmen and Yurko.
Hello there.
Weekdays, noon to 2, on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Thank you to a few listeners with tips on the better at Rivers over the weekend that won over a schmill, a couple of golf wagers, and the Cash Out King. That's his moniker, right, Merck? Merck's out, yeah. Where'd Merck go, Chris?
You know, I don't know as he walks back in the room, but...
Where'd you go, Merck? Poor Merck's limping around. He's got an IT band issue. That's not like a band that he likes from college or anything. He's actually like his IT band and his lower half.
This is so painful.
Yeah, Merck's walking around like he's 80. The Cash Out King is going to come on, right?
He's most likely going to join us at 149.
149.
We'll give his name out when he comes on.
But yeah, it's a bit the big reveal. I mean, I don't know if he maybe just wants us to call him the Cash Out King.
He's my hero, you know, because I love betting golf. But
this guy won $1.1 million. Over the weekend, betting at Rivers or betting with the app. We'll get the skinny from him coming up when he joins us in about a half hour. It's Carmen and Yurko. Yurk's off this week on vacation. He'll be back next week. Tomorrow, Jeff Meller will be in with me. Chris Bleck will be in later in the week. Chris is here now, obviously. So is Randy Merkin. So lots happening. We told you earlier that the Washington Redskins are officially changing the name. We don't have to even say it anymore. I mean, and it's about time, for crying out loud. You know, Redskin is a slur, plain and simple. That's what it is. We knew this was coming in about the last week or so anyway, that details started to emerge that this was happening. Do we know why Daniel Snyder finally changed his mind? You know, 5-10 years ago, he had once said, USA Today, you can print it. I'll never, ever change the name. There were people that were saying he would sell the team before ever being forced to change the name of the team.
How do I say this? Corporate pressure.
FedEx.
Right? FedEx and Nike. Nike removing all of the Washington football stuff off their website, so
you
can't buy anything. I think that when you hit the pocketbook,
I guess so.
I think you start to move on something.
Is he
right?
Doing it begrudgingly? That would be a shame, but at least it's gone finally, right?
But at least the right thing will be had, right? Can I give you guys some of the options? I have Odd Sharks up here, some of the options.
Ooh, yeah, I like this. I like
you
how guys we're betting on this now.
You guys want to do yay or nay for the names? Yay or nay? You guys,
sure.
On whether or not you like these?
Yeah, the new name for Washington.
So right now, Odd Shark has Red Tails or Red Clouds as plus 275 as the favorite. Either one of those options. Red Tails or Red Clouds.
I don't like Red Clouds, but I do like Red Tails.
So I didn't know what Red Clouds Red Cloud would be. It's a Native American chief.
Oh,
it's a specific person.
So it would be like Blackhawk.
It would be much like the Blackhawks, where it is representative of a single person.
Okay. In Washington, it could be Red Tape.
Sorry. That was pretty good, Randy, actually. Yerne on,
that was pretty good.
Either of those names, Yerne.
I'm definitely for Red Tails. You know, Red Cloud, but do they run into the same problem at some point? Again, because, like, the Blackhawks have faced pressure over the years. And I was explaining that the difference is Blackhawk, like Chris just said, Red Cloud is an actual historic figure. Chief Blackhawk is a historical Native American figure. And that is where the Chicago Blackhawks get their name. It's named from. And they've always seemed to, not that they have been totally without controversy at times, a little bit, But they seem to have been separated, certainly from the Redskins and the Indians over the years, because it is much more representation of a real historical, significant Native American person, you know? So, but hey, they might change someday too, guys. And so would they face the same issue down the 5 years from now if people say it's still not good enough? I don't know. Like, I think Red Tails is fine, is cool. I mean,
yeah, I'm good with that. I'm a yay for that. Yeah. For Red Cloud, I would kind of feel like, are they trying to shoehorn keeping all the imagery?
Right.
Right. Like, isn't the point of this is getting away from the face on the side of the helmet type of thing?
Change,
because
that's
what the Blackhawks are going to run into is people are going to understand Chief Blackhawk.
Right.
But then people are going to come back and say, yeah, but the picture itself may be offensive.
Right.
So I feel, Carmen, you're right on that. I think if you go Red Clouds, you're just setting yourself up to have to change down the road at some point.
Yeah, I can't.
Anyway, so Merck, yay or nay on either of those?
I like the first one. Red Tails.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Plus 300, the Warriors, which I think kind of plays into the same concept, right? Because if you're going with the Washington Warriors, I like the alliteration, but then what would the imagery be?
You could do an imagery of something historic from our nation's military, to be honest. You could get away with that,
okay.
Right?
I can see that.
And you're in Washington, you're representing the Warriors that have defended this country.
Sure.
I'd be cool with that. I'd be all right with that.
Merck, yeah or nay?
I am totally fine with that.
I'm yay for this.
Next up, both at plus 650, the Presidents or the Monuments. I'm nay on both of those. I think those aren't good teams.
I'm definitely nay on Presidents, yeah. Monuments, I think I'm nay. Yeah, I don't know. Like, okay, I get it. You're surrounded by monuments, but...
You could do better.
You could do better. Like, Red Tails and Warriors are flat out better.
Yes, yes. Plus 800, Americans... The Washington Americans.
Nah.
Because, is that saying that everyone else is not American? I mean, yeah, come on.
I guess.
Eh, I'm nay on that one.
Cowboys against the Americans, that doesn't really work for me, right?
No, it doesn't.
Plus 850, hogs or any variation of hogs.
Ooh.
And some of the variations are like red hogs or just the hogs. I kind of like hogs.
That's kind of interesting for uninitiated, I guess you'd say. You'd be like, what does that mean? Famed Washington Redskins Lions of the 80s were known as the Hogs. So.
The only problem is that they don't play that way anymore, right? I mean,
it's a cool nickname, and you can allow the people to still wear
they can dress up like pigs.
Yeah, like that's fine. You have a pig mascot, have a pig on the... Okay, hold on. If you put a pig on the side of the helmet, this just got real. Like, that's cool. Think about it. If a team had a pig on the side of the helmet,
well, like the Razorbacks, that's a cool logo.
Yeah,
but you can't have like a little piggy. You need a wild boar. Yeah,
the Cubs have a cub.
Well, yeah, that's true, but it's not a pig. Like a little piggy to me for a football team, that'd be soft. I need like a Razorback logo.
By the way, can I tell you? In college, in my fraternity, I had this guy's name was Daryl Bob. He lived in the D.C. area and was a Redskins fan. The most annoying fan. I'm not lying. I mean, I rooted so hard every Sunday for the Redskins.
Because you hated this guy?
Because I didn't know. He was a great guy, but I didn't want to hear him come back saying, another win for the Redskins. He was so annoying. He was so annoying.
You don't want any of that.
See, the other options, plus 900 and even greater odds, are all kind of boring. Generals, Lincolns, Federals, Senators, Founders.
We've had Senators.
That's all boring.
We've had the Washington Senators, you know?
Odd Sharks doesn't list it, but I saw the Red Wolves as an option, too.
It's not a bad one, either. I'm going Red Tails. Cool. Warriors, I think, is fine. You could do that in a very tasteful way, again, with some sort of a tribute. The logo, the mascot could be some sort of a tribute to our nation's military. I think you could do that. But obviously, it was time for the old name to go away. It was time a long time ago. Will the same happen to the Blackhawks? I don't know. Again, they've never faced the same sort of mounting pressure because it is a completely different representation. But someday they might just say, you know what? We're not comfortable with it anymore. We've talked to people within the Native American community. We realize it is offensive and we are going to change it. And maybe they tweak the logo and they just use the feathers or something like that. And they're just called the Hawks. I don't know. My life will go on. I love that logo. I love that team. If they want to change it because they feel like it's the right thing to do, so be it. I'll still love the Chicago Hawks or whatever else they'd be called. Vito is on ESPN 1000. What's up, Vito?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How about the Washington Bisons?
The Washington Bisons. I mean, the only thing is, like, is the bison...
A bison is a buffalo, so
right,
you
I
can't
know.
Really say
yeah.
buff.
Right.
But, I mean, it would be, I don't know, it would be kind of cool. I mean,
it's,
you know,
a it's a representation of, like, the American frontier. I mean, I kind of get it. All right. I mean, I guess that's not bad, Vito. We're spitballing here. It's not bad. I think maybe something in relation to the military. That's why the Red Tails thing is kind of cool, or the Warriors could be cool. I think would be something good that they could do. Vito, thanks. Patrick's on the south side. What's up, Patrick?
Yeah, I don't know if this is still kind of too close, but how about the Washington Pigskins? I mean, it's football, pigskin, you know what I'm saying? But
I don't know. What just you're doing there. It's a little different, Patrick. It's not bad.
You can keep still calling the Skins, I guess. I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if that's still too close for people's comfort. But, yeah, I don't know, just spitballing.
Thanks, Patrick. See you, buddy.
Pigskins. We get a pig on the helmet, though.
It's got to be a boar. It's got to be angry. You can't exactly copy Arkansas, but it's got to be an angry. It's got to be an angry pig. You can't have Miss Piggy on there, I'm telling you. We get a pig on the helmet. I'd love to know what that design would look like. We'll take more of your calls coming up. 312-332-3776. Plus, a new list from Bill Barnwell ranking the best offensive weapons for all 32 NFL teams. Where do the Bears rank? We'll fill you in coming up next.
You're listening to Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Follow at Carmen DeFalco and at Yurko64 on Twitter.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Hey, Brian Urlacher might be a part owner of the Mets soon. We told you about that, right? He's teaming up with J-Lo and Alex Rodriguez. They're a pretty good group they've put together. Like, a lot of current athletes, some former ones, Joe Thomas, Travis Kelce. And we were wondering how much Urlacher would throw in. I mean, he made a pretty penny. Yurko's off this week, but he texted me. I forgot about Urlacher making a bunch of money with vitamin water, right? Like, he had... Urlacher, I think, cashed in pretty good when vitamin water sold.
And if I am correct, I thought at one time on the year, maybe he said that he didn't spend a lot of his money from his playing days.
So he's, you know,
he lives off, like, endorsements, I think.
Like, if he took care of his money, that's what they say Gronk did, too.
And,
Urlacher could scratch, he could put 50 mil maybe together as part of that, right? He'd get a nice little chunk of the franchise.
The rumor was that Jay Leno never spent any of his Tonight Show money and lived strictly off his endorsements. And
I don't buy that. He's got a car museum. Right?
You know how much money he's made off.
Well, but Mark, doesn't he have a car collection that's like in the hundreds of millions of dollars? I mean, how could he?
That's the rumor.
Boy, guy's sitting on a lot of coin.
By the way, just a quick thing. We're talking Redskins right now.
We're
going
to get back to the phone calls, too.
I reached out to Daryl Green, and he's doing a lot of media right now.
I saw earlier he was on Sports Center.
So did you see it? You were off last week, and this actually happened during the holiday, too. Did you see Asante Samuel's tweet about him?
About Daryl Green? No.
Yeah. He said, with all due respect, can someone explain to me why Daryl Green is considered great? He played 19 years. It was mostly a nickelback. 54 interceptions in 19 years. Talk to me.
I was Daryl Green mostly a nickelback?
No.
That doesn't sound right whatsoever.
Daryl Green would cover your best wide receiver, and that would be it.
Like, he was also one of the fastest guys. I mean, Daryl Green could run
and
cover with anybody.
Oh,
yeah.
I
would disagree with that. I mean, I don't know. Is Asante Samuel confusing him with someone else?
No, and then, like, Tony Dungy, a bunch of, like, NFL legends came out and, like, basically didn't want to be rude, but, like, what are you talking about? Like,
he certainly wasn't a nickelback.
And someone posted a bunch of video of him guarding Jerry Rice and, like, just dominating Jerry Rice.
Yeah, I mean, a nickelback is your extra defensive back that comes in to cover a slot position when a linebacker comes off the field. Yeah, that is grossly inaccurate. Daryl Green was awfully good. We'll get back to the calls here in just a second. I want to read something from Bill Barnwell, ranking the NFL offensive weapons for all 32 teams. He picks the best and the worst. I don't think it's going to come as a shock that the Bears aren't very high on this list. They're actually fifth worst, guys. They are 28th on the list. Let's face it, when we're going off of last year's data and last year's film, there's one guy you could be excited about, right, as an offensive weapon, as a true weapon. That was Allen Robinson. Even with, not the best supporting cast around him, questionable play at the quarterback position, a quarterback that at times wasn't protected well enough by an offensive line. Allen Robinson still went out and had a terrific year. Lest you forgot.
From the 22-yard line now, Trubisky stepping up, fires down the sideline. Robinson makes the catch, but a flag is down. Daniel with the fade. Robinson, touchdown. 32-yard line. Play action down the middle of the field. It is Robinson into the end zone. Touchdown, Chicago. Second and goal. Pass caught. Touchdown, Chicago. Allen Robinson. Four. Chicago to add to their lead here with a touchdown. They get the ball to start the second half.
I mean, he was the man, right? On an offense that was completely inept, Allen Robinson still had nearly 1,200 yards. So the Bears ranked 28th on Barnwell's list. The only teams that are worse, the aforementioned Washington team, the Jaguars, I think they were dead last going into last year. Now they've gone up one spot, guys. The Dolphins and the Jets. And the criteria here is contract value doesn't matter. Only 2020 matters. Wide receivers matter more than other positions. And top-level talent is worth more than depth. And basically what he's trying to accomplish here is imagine if every team's running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends were dropped onto a brand new team with an average quarterback, an average O-line, and an average coaching staff. Which offense would be the most productive after you throw the likes of Deshaun Watson and Kyle Shanahan out the window? So that's what they're going for here, and the Bears are 28th. He writes, Allen Robinson deserves better than this. Having spent his entire career catching passes from Blake Bortles and Mitchell Trubisky, he'll get a comparative upgrade this season if the Bears start Nick Foles. The former Penn State star held up his end of the bargain a year ago, racking up nearly 1,200 yards and 7 touchdowns on 154 targets. Anthony Miller finished the season with 656 yards and averaged nearly 1.5 yards per route run, but drops and shoulder injuries have been a concern through his first two seasons, and the former second-rounder likely profiles best as a full-time slot receiver. The other weapons on this roster have failed to live up to expectations, although much of that was due to injuries. Tariq Cohen's 7 drops on 103 targets were the exception. And then he talks about a few of the new additions like Ted Ginn Jr. and Jimmy Graham, older, later in their careers. I also don't blame too many of those drops on Cohen. I guess I should go back and look at all of them. But remember where Tariq Cohen was getting the ball thrown to him on a lot of those little ridiculous passes down the line of scrimmage where he's trying to burst upfield and the ball's going to his back shoulder. It was ridiculous. Maybe they don't count that as a drop. I don't know how they work that data. But Tariq Cohen ain't the problem. You know, and anybody that expects too much out of Tariq Cohen needs to readjust their expectations. But like Jeff Van Gundy once said, you know, if you think Tariq Cohen is the problem, you don't know the answer. Gorman's in Mount Greenwood on the southwest side on ESPN 1000. What's up, Gorman?
Hey, fellas. I was thinking for the Redskins, their new name might be the Washington Congressman. I don't know. I'm struggling with trying to come up with a better name. You know, you got the Patriots right down the street from them. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, we've had the Senators before. Maybe now you just you go to the other chamber, right? You go over to the Congressman. You know, sure. Throw in the hopper. I think they can find something clever that ties into the military. I think that's what they're going to do, too. Hey, look, the Washington baseball team did this. They left Montreal. They're no longer the Expos. Nationals is catchy, right? The logo looks cool. Washington Nationals works. Let's say hi to Marcus in Crete. Where's Marcus? There he is. What's up, Marcus?
What's good, guys?
How you doing?
Washington Capitol. I'm sorry, you got the Washington, D.C. is the Capitol. You got the Pentagon. So I'm going to go with the Washington Shield. I think that's pretty clever, man.
That's not bad. Out of everything I've heard so far, that one I like the best, I think, out of what the listeners have come up with. Marcus, good work. I could see that. I like what he did there. Ron's in Orland Park on the south side. What up, Ron?
What's up, Carm? How are you doing?
Good. How you doing, buddy?
Still be strong.
That's right.
Hey, I just got to say, if the Blackhawks ever did have to change their logo, now I'm admittedly not a big hockey fan. I watch the Hawks like Tom Waddle during the playoffs. But my favorite logo is the Blackhawks. And one of my favorite hats is the one with the C with the two X's. If they had to change it to just that, I think they would be in pretty good shape.
Yeah, and I you know, look, that might not even be good enough if they really feel mounting pressure, if they feel like they want to do something that gets rid of all the Native American imagery. I do like that one, too. Their logos, look, I think it's great. Yeah, I do. But I also understand that it could be extremely offensive to people, and you have to be understanding of that. And I am understanding of it. Do I think it's great? I do. I think most people would tell you, even if you're not a hockey fan, most people would look at for years have looked across North American in sports and said, man, that Blackhawk logo is the coolest logo in sports. It's beautiful. It's majestic. It's colorful. Like, it's everything, you know, you'd want it to be. But if an entire race of people looks at that and says, we don't like it and it's offensive to us, how are we supposed to just thumb our nose at that? I don't think that's the right attitude to have. So if they feel like they should change it someday, so be it. I'll continue to be a Chicago Hawks fan or whatever they're called. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, so our guy's going to join us, right, Merck? The guy that won $1.1 million, a Chicago guy who on yesterday's golf tournament won $1.1 million betting at Rivers Casino in the sports book. He is going to join us to tell us the full story coming up next. We also got to play something hilarious. Speaking of former Redskins, he was briefly a Redskin. Bruce Smith just out there, to say the least, over the weekend on Celebrity Family Feud. We're going to sneak that in and play it for you coming up. Don't go anywhere.
This is Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
It was a very good weekend, a very good Sunday for one local Chicago gambler. Kappa first presented us with this story during Crosstalk, and then a few guys on Twitter said, yeah, local guy, the Cash Out King on Twitter, at Cash Out King. I went to his timeline. All looks legit, unless he's totally playing us. I don't think so. He won $1.1 million. He tweeted yesterday, Colin Morikawa is my hero, 1.1 mil. What a bleeping rush. What a bleeping day. Love you all. He posted his tickets here. He had Colin Morikawa after round one at 50 to one. He put $4,000 on that. That's a nice, that's all you need. I mean, that's it. That's $200,000. Then he's got Colin Morikawa in the top five. Then he's got him to win it all. And he hit on all of it. The Cash Out King is on the Corona hotline right now with Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Yurko's off this week. Do you have a name, or should I just call you Cash Out King?
Well, Carmen, it's Cash Out King Jay, but my name is Justin. How are you doing, man?
Justin. All right, so you're a local guy, right, Justin?
I am, correct.
And, I mean, you're making substantial wagers. Something leads me to believe that you didn't go to Rivers for the first time and put down your first sports bet, right?
I mean, it's rather recent. Rivers Sportsbook has been open for, what, around 3 weeks now? So at least gambling in Illinois, it's rather recent that I've been doing that.
But are you a long-time sports gambler, though? You're just doing it legally here now for the first time?
Absolutely.
Okay, 100%. So you're a seasoned sports gambler. Now, did you use the app, or did you go into Rivers?
No, I use their website online. It's fairly easy to use. Okay. Well, I mean, what they're doing over there is incredible.
Is it?
It's awesome.
All right, so Morikawa. First of all, he was in a playoff a few weeks ago. For people that might not be familiar with the name, people are going to be familiar with it because he's going to win a lot. I mean, he's just a young kid. He's in his second year, I think, on the tour, and he's going to win. What was the first wager you made when the tournament started? Did you just make one bet at the start of the tournament?
Contrary to popular belief that I made multiple bets, and the only bet that I posted was the Morikawa bet around Wednesday at, like, I'd say 7 p.m., I posted that we were going with Morikawa, and it was him specifically. That stemmed from the week before I won Bryson DeChambeau at plus 200 after I took Sungjae Im to start, which wasn't the best bet. And because of Sungjae Im, we came up with the moniker that we only take handsome golfers only, and Morikawa was a beautiful-looking man.
He is handsome.
So we had to go with it.
I tell you, he's a good-looking kid. That's actually very true. All right, exactly. So you bet him to win. You bet him to lead after round one. That one hits. Now, so explain that again. Did you have all the bets made, or did you go through the weekend and make these bets as you went along?
I mean, normally what I do pre-tournament is I get limited. So if you were to take a look at my Twitter and look at the tickets on Twitter, I tried to take Colin Morikawa to win for $50,000, which would have paid back roughly around $1.7 million. They limited me to, I believe that bet was around $5,000. So I said, all right, let's spread it out. Let's get something on the first round so we can at least know immediately if we're in trouble.
Right.
Then they changed the odds, got that, got the enhanced offering, then got a six-shooter and a few other things as well.
Now, when they limit you, is that because the bet is too big for them to take, or is that because they know who you are and you're an established sports gambler?
I would say it's probably more or less it's too big of a bet for them to want that type of exposure.
Okay. Do any other casinos ever limit you?
Yeah, all the time. FanDuel and DraftKings do the same thing, just relative to the bet, honestly.
Are you a good golf gambler? I mean, do you make a lot of golf wagers and win?
No, I would say baseball, basketball, and football are my best sports. We have nothing going on right now because of COVID. I grew up playing golf. I love golf. And I really didn't start betting it till recently. And I got to tell you, like, this was lucky. When I went to yesterday and we were three back, I thought, no way are we going to even have a chance at this. Then we got up and got three back again, and I was like, all right, well, at least we won the first day. Let's get the top five, and, you know, we'll be happy with the half a mil that we win from it. And the craziest golf being event I've ever been a part of in my life happened, and I won.
Yeah, for people who don't know, I mean, Justin Thomas, I walked off the 15th, green with a three-shot lead yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. So then Morikawa comes back, picks up a stroke on each of the final three, forces the playoff. So like you said, you had already won the first round bet. You're in then for top five. That's another one that's going to hit. What are your emotions like as they're teeing it off on 18 to start that playoff hole?
On 18, I mean, I'm with my family. I'm with my friends. The whole idea that, okay, if he gets a birdie bogey, he could win the tournament. Then he hits a shot, which was an incredible shot. And the bigger problem was the playoff, when it was the second playoff hole, and JT is, I believe, 56 feet away from the hole. Morikawa is like 24 feet downhill putt. I had my phone in my hand, unfortunately, because PGA wasn't showing the event on TV for some reason. You had to stream it off of your computer.
Ridiculous.
I saw that Justin Thomas birdied that 56-footer, and my heart just sunk. I was like, there is no way he hit that putt. And so I'm like, it's over, whatever. Just, and in my head, I'm like, Justin, just be happy with the situation. You did well. It's an incredible pick. And then you see Morikawa drain that putt, and it was just exhilarating.
And then they go to the next playoff hole, and that's where he won it. At Cash Out King J. That's who we're talking to. He is the Cash Out King on Twitter. Now, I see you have 13,000 followers, so you've got a little bit of a following. Mm-hmm. I just started following as well. I mean, do you give out, you keep saying we and like we're giving out picks. Do you give out picks to people? Do you give out your sports bets like as a service or?
It's not a service. I don't believe in being a tout. I don't like people that sell their players. There's probably about two people I respect that do. I do it for free. I make enough money myself. I gave out a soccer play earlier. I just checked my phone. We have Real Sociedad for draw no bet for a lot of money. They just scored a goal. I think you're a lucky charm, honestly, so thank you for having me on for that goal.
Sure.
I give out my plays for free. I want to make people money. We're called Sweat Nation. It started when I was streaming video games on elliptical to lose weight because I do not like what I see in the mirror half the time. I'm not that fat, but I don't love it. And so that's where it kind of came from. We sweat bets together. We try to better each other, and we have a good time doing it.
Wow. All right, so you're going to make a bet. You got to take a little bit of the winnings, right? You're going to bet the Memorial. It's an incredible field this weekend. Tiger's playing. Will you post a golf bet? Are you going to make some more golf bets this weekend?
100% we'll post a golf bet. I'm not entirely sure who I'm going with. I do love Tiger. The thing about the last tournament was I love Justin Thomas. I love Victor Hovland. So at the end of the day, I mean, all these golfers are good. All I can promise you is whoever it takes is going to be an attractive-looking man.
Yes, I like that philosophy. You got to find a handsome man.
Exactly.
Will you spoil yourself with something? Or is this all part of, like, is this just business? Is this, it goes into trying to make more money sports gambling? Or do you go out and buy a new watch? Do you buy a new car? Are you going to do something special with $1.1 million?
Last week after I won DeChambeau, I bought an AMG.
Not bad.
I'm probably not going to spoil myself anymore. I have what I need. I got the people around me that I love, and I'm trying to be smart with the winnings that I have. I'm absolutely degenerate, but I'm going to keep trying to move forward, doing the best I can for the people around me. So buying anything else, probably not. Might give away some money on Twitter. I do that all the time when we win because I believe that's good karma.
Wow.
And we'll see from there.
You sound like an honest guy. I mean, and you just said, oh, I'm a degenerate. But I mean, like the life of someone, like, is this how you make your living or do you have another job?
I mean, I've worked plenty of jobs. I lived in Los Angeles for 5 years.
Okay.
I've worked terrible jobs. I'm wearing a sleeveless right now in my AMG talking to you. I much prefer this lifestyle that I'm living right now than any lifestyle I've had previously, and hopefully I can continue it.
But you've had big losses, I would assume, over the years, too, right?
Of course.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. Listen, Justin, thanks, man. At Cash Out King Jay, follow him. Great story. Congratulations. It's fabulous. Good promotion for Rivers. I'm sure they love it. Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Carmen. Glad to be on.
All right, buddy. See ya. That's Justin, the Cash Out King. Pretty spectacular. And he posted the three tickets, 1-1-1, collecting $238,217.09, $204,000. And $205,000, this is just the golf bets, $205,740 with Colin Morikawa's amazing comeback win yesterday. When we come back, we'll cross talk with Waddle and Sylvie. We should play the Bruce Smith stuff from Family Feud and have some fun with the guys about that. Talk about all the day's news, and we'll see if Sylvie's already texting Urlacher to see if he's going to own the Mets and if maybe he can get us into like the suite one day. I'm sure he's going to get his own box for each and every game. Crosstalk is coming up next. We're back in just 2 minutes.